Well, there it is. There's the climax of their first very bad date. Hope you've enjoyed reenacting my very first date with my wife, Andrea, 30 years ago. Just kidding. It wasn't nearly that bad. How many of you have been here all 4 weeks in this relationship series? Can I just see your hand? Okay, so you've seen we've been progressing on this very bad first date and seeing how it just keeps getting worse and worse. And all of us are in relationships, whether we're married or whether we're dating or whether, you know, where we are, we're all in relationships and we all need these life hacks for relationships. We all need help in our relationships to go forward. And today is the last sermon in this series. So we're going to talk about our last life hack. And each one of these we've been getting from Jesus. We've been calling him the relationship coach. He's the one who has these great principles. And we're not used to thinking about Jesus as the relationship coach. And we're also maybe not used to thinking about this language of life hack for relationship. So let me just get this definition one more time. The life hack is some tool, some skill that you pick up that helps you be more effective or more efficient in a relationship that you're in, that helps you be successful in an area you're in. And of all the areas in your life, we've been saying that relationships, right? The relationships are the most important part of your life, that your quality of life is dependent upon the quality of your relationships. And so we're all in different places in our relationships. You can't have a good life if you don't have good relationships. And thank God we have all different kinds of relationships. And so we've been looking in this series, how do we improve the relationships we're in? And I know there's this broad spectrum. Some of us are dating. Some of us are married. Some of us are in different times of our life that we're in different places in our relationships. In the last three weeks, this is the topics we've looked at. Drawing all these from Jesus. And first of all, that first week, we talked about how important forgiveness is. That if we don't forgive one another, there's no way that we can have a healthy relationship with that person. Now, obviously, I'm talking about the relationships that are close to us. The relationships that are people that we hardly know, this is not that big of a deal. But the people that are closest to us, they offend us. We offend them. We hurt each other. We must learn the life hack of forgiveness. Similar to that is the learning the art of apology, that sometimes we're the ones that need to initiate and just say, I'm sorry. How do we do that? Because you can apologize in such a way that you actually do more harm to the relationship than you are helping it. So we talked about learning the life hack of how to apologize. And then last week, we talked about this most important life hack of treating the person we're in relationship with as if they're the VIP instead of acting as if we're the VIP. And every time we act as though, you know, I'm the most important one in this relationship, whether we say that or not doesn't matter. If you act in such a way that you're the most important one in the relationship, you are going to destroy the beauty and the health of that relationship. It'll dwindle. You'll suck the life out of it. It's self-centeredness, and it destroys our relationships. So we talked about how Jesus taught us to put the other person first, to honor the other person, and that by simply doing that, we bring a life to the relationship that is so healthy and so significant. So today, the one last message in this series, and one more principle from Jesus, the life coach, the relationship coach, one more life hack. In fact, I've called this Jesus' favorite life hack because, it doesn't say this in the Bible. You won't find in the Bible the words life hack, let alone life hacks for relationship. You also won't find anywhere in the New Testament the idea of Jesus as a relationship coach. But if you've been with me the last 3 weeks, and you're with me today, right? You're with me today? Okay, just checking. Haven't you seen that the things that Jesus has to say are awesome for relationships? They're so applicable. And whether it's a teaching he's given, and then all of a sudden in the middle of that teaching, you see this great relationship principle, or whether it's a story he's telling, and you're like, oh, I can draw a truth from that to help me in relationships. We keep finding these great ideas, these great principles, these great life hacks. And I've enjoyed this series as I've been studying the Bible. And one of the things that I've noticed from Jesus is how many times he starts a conversation, starts a relationship with a question. Now, when we think about Jesus as a relationship life coach, you could slip into starting to think of Jesus as the answer man. You have a problem with your relationship, you go to Jesus. He's the counselor. He's the answer man. Whatever question you have, go to Jesus. He's the answer guy. In fact, I think that's sometimes how we treat the Bible. I hear people saying, well, the Bible is the answer book for life. It's the manual for life. No, no, no. Please don't treat the Bible as an answer book. It's not an answer book. The Bible is the revelation of who God is. It's God's revelation to who, to of who he is to help us understand who he is so we can understand who we are and figure out life not from the standpoint of getting all of our questions answered, you know, go to this page to get this answer, but to know God, because to know him is eternal life, to walk with him, to be in relationship with God. That's where, quote unquote, the answers come. That's where life comes. So I don't want us to treat the Bible like an answer book. I want us to treat the Bible as a way of God opening up himself to us, inviting us in. And instead of thinking of Jesus as the answer man, I'd like to introduce Jesus today as the question man. Those of you who know your Bibles, think how many times Jesus starts a relationship, starts a conversation, starts a teaching with a question. Isn't it like his favorite way to start something? He starts a conversation with a question. It gets people thinking. I found 307 different questions that Jesus asked. He's not the answer man. He's the question man. And when Jesus is asked a question, I counted over 183 questions that people asked Jesus in the Gospels, different questions. Do you know how many times Jesus directly answered one of those 183 questions with an answer? Anybody want to guess? Out of 183, it's like 7 or 8. 183 different questions, and 175 times he left people going, what? I came to you with a question, you know, I wanted an answer, and instead Jesus throws it back with another question or just kind of goes around the question. And Jesus didn't see himself as an answer man. He sees himself as a teacher, as a rabbi. He knows the power of questions to open up, here's the significance, to open up issues, to open up relationships, to open up questions, to open up thinking. Because while we think what we need are answers, we don't need answers. We need a relationship. And so Jesus introduces this way of teaching. I shouldn't say introduces, because a lot of the rabbis of his day recognized the power of using questions. It was a very common practice. In fact, I put up a couple of questions here that Jesus asked. I lifted these right out of the Gospels. And notice the cool thing about a lot of these questions. Some of them, on the surface, they just seem like a surface question, a simple question. But the more you think about it, the more powerful the question. Why are you afraid? He asks that one time when the disciples are in the boat, you know, and you know the wind is blowing. And of course they're afraid because of the wind. The boat's going to overturn. They're going to drown. That's why they're afraid. But Jesus' question, if you let it think about it, it sinks into you. It's a great question to just give a lot of thought to. Let me ask you, why are you afraid? You say, well, I'm not afraid. Well, right now you're not, you know, I'm not a scary guy, am I? No, you're not. You're afraid I might not shut up today, but I will. The Browns are going to get beat by the Bengals, and I want to see that. So I'll stop preaching at some point. But, you know, the deeper things. When you are afraid, when you react in a relationship that's out of fear, when you lash out or when you hide or when you do things in your relationships that are from fear, why? Why are you afraid? Why do you keep from launching out into the deep? What's holding you back? Isn't this a great question? All by itself, you could spend a ton of time with that question. Why are you afraid? It might be a great question for you to ask God to help you think through. Lord, what am I afraid of? Why don't I trust you? Why don't I just jump out and obey you? Help me see what I'm afraid of. Or here's a couple other questions. What are you looking for? Oh, that's good. Who are you looking for? It's a great relationship question. Those of you who are dating or would like to be dating, and good, let me just think about this question for a second. As you're thinking about the kind of person you'd like to date, the kind of person you'd like to marry maybe, who are you looking for? And I'm not, you know, asking you to think about what color is their hair, how tall they are, or, you know, how big his muscles are. You know, those are all surface things. What is it you're looking for? Who are you wanting to spend the rest of your life with? Who are you looking for in life? And you start thinking about these questions, and they're so much deeper than just what appears on the surface. Or how about the time that Jesus looks to his disciples and some other religious leaders, and he says, why do you guys keep calling me Lord, Lord, you know, which means boss, master, you're the sovereign one. Why do you keep calling me Lord, but you don't do what I say? Ouch. It's a good question for you to think about. Many of you here today would say, Jesus is the Lord of your life. Jesus, you're singing, Jesus is Lord. He's the Lord of my life. Why don't you obey him? Why do you keep doing your own thing? That's a good question to wrestle with and think about. And if that offends you, then ask the next question that Jesus asked. Does this offend you? Why does it offend you? Well, I'll help you on this one. Because you want to be Lord, right? That's the human condition. But these are the questions that Jesus asked. Where is your faith? Similar to what are you afraid of? Do you see how why are you afraid and where is your faith? They belong together. Someone shake your head like you see, yeah, see, these belong together. So many of the questions that Jesus asks, they repay sitting in them, pondering them, wrestling with them. If you're a person that likes to journal, take the questions of Jesus, just take one at a time and write about it. Journal, what's happening inside of me as I wrestle with this question, as I ponder this question. One time he asked his disciples, what are you guys arguing about? I'm leading the way in this particular story. Jesus is leading the way. He's teaching, and he hears the disciples behind him arguing about. What they're arguing about is who is the greatest. Jesus never asks a question because he doesn't know the answer. He knew why they were arguing. He wanted to use that question to help them see what they were doing, to open them up to a teaching. He never asks you a question because he doesn't know the answer. He uses questions to get us to stop and think, why am I here? What do I want? What am I looking for? So I invite you to learn from the question man, not the answer man, the question man, Jesus Christ, as he asked you questions. And in this series on relationships, I want you to specifically think about these questions in terms of the relationships you're in. Again, you're dating, you're married, you want to be married, you know, you're divorced, and you'd like to get married again. Whatever, you know, we're all different kind of places. Think about these questions, many of them, in terms of the relationship capital that they have, how they impact our relationships. And specifically, I want to start off with a question that you've seen before, because I've preached from this question. Turn to John chapter 1. If you're new here, you may not realize this, but if you've been here a while, you know we're preaching through the Gospel of John. And you're like, no, don't go backwards. We're trying to go. Yeah, just pause for a second. I want to go back to the first question that Jesus asked in the Gospel of John. It's in John 1, first question he asked, and it's a relationship question. Jesus asks this question. We see it as a discipleship question, but discipleship, isn't discipleship relationship? Shake your head. Isn't discipleship being in relationship with Jesus? So every discipleship question is a relationship question, and watch this. The relationship questions that Jesus asks are not just true for the relationship we have with him, because all relationships have a lot of similar things about them. Whether they're a relationship between us and God, us and Jesus, or whether it's a friendship we have, or whether it's a marriage we're in, or whether it's a relationship where we're dating, every relationship has some things about it that every relationship has. And one of those are, what are you looking for? What do you want? What are you seeking? And so when Jesus in John 1:38 asks this question of two disciples, what do you want? If you look at your New Testament, up to this point, John the Baptist has been teaching and preaching and has a disciples around him. And one day, Jesus walks by and John the Baptist points out to everybody, hey, there's the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Well, that gets everybody's attention, including these two disciples that in verse 35 through 37 have been following John. Now they stop following John the Baptist and they turn and they start, says they start following Jesus. Jesus sees them, turns around and says, what do you guys want? Some of your translations ask the question, what are you looking for? Because the idea of what do you want is what is it you desire? What are you seeking? So you can see how what are you looking for is a good translation. So whichever translation you have, both of those are great questions. What do you want? What are you looking for? And again, the disciples, when they first heard this, they were just in the context that they're in. They're like, well, you know, they say, I'm looking to know where you're staying. I want to follow you. I want to learn more about you. But what a great question, as we said, to let percolate into our hearts and to think about in a deeper way, and that I want us to think about in our relationships. There's maybe some of you here who are married who are thinking about getting out of your marriage. Before you jump to that decision, ask this question. What do you want? Why are you thinking about leaving? What are you looking for? Those of you who are thinking about this person you're dating, going further, before you go any further, stop and ask the question, what do I want? What am I looking for? You see how this seemingly innocent question can reap so much benefit as you let it settle in your heart? This is true for so many questions that Jesus asked that look so innocent, that look so simple, but repay study as we start thinking about them. What do you want? What are you looking for? And of course, in this case, the disciples were saying, well, we want to learn more about you. We want to discover who you are. We'll come back to that in a second. First of all, notice that before you write anything down, notice that Jesus is starting the relationship between these guys and him with a question. This is something to learn. Jesus teaches us that asking questions is a great way to start or to build. I use both of those to build relationships. I want to talk to you today about something that you might think is so simple. Well, of course, everybody knows that questions help start and build relationships. Really? Do you know that? Are you intentional about it? Do you use questions to go deeper in the relationship, to help learn something about the person, to discover? Or do you do what 99% of us do in discussion, in conversation, in relationship? Instead of asking questions, we slip into assumption. Well, I've been married for all these years. I know what she's thinking. I know what he's thinking. I know what he's going to say next. You know, and there might be a sense in which you do, but you don't know exactly what they're thinking. And when you move to assumption in the relationship, it begins to deteriorate the relationship automatically. Because assumption always brings in things that aren't true. You think they're true, you live in that reality, and now you're reacting out of that, and that you're no longer in that relationship, you're in another relationship that's not really the one you're in. Am I making sense? You're inventing a relationship that you're not actually in. The only way you can advance that relationship is to ask a question of that person you're in relationship with. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? Help me understand. I want to learn what you're thinking. I want to learn to know you. I want to understand you. I want to discover, and so I ask questions. It's the arrogant person. I'm sorry. It's the arrogant person who lives in assumption. I know what she's thinking. I know what he's thinking. And that will begin to deteriorate your relationship. Again, this is true for all relationships. Assumption begins to deteriorate. Questions begin to open. Assumption closes the possibilities of the relationship. Questions open. See this? Because, again, you're asking because you don't know. I don't care how well you think you know. Maybe you've been a student of questions, and you're asking great questions, and you know a lot about your spouse. You've been together for many, many years. You've asked a lot of great questions. Way to go. Don't stop now. You never should never stop discovering who this person is that you're married with. So I want you to see whether you're early in or long in the relationship. Questions are wonderful tools to help us discover and learn. Now, let me warn you. When a relationship gets to the point, whether it's early or late, where one or both of the partners stop discovering that relationship begins to deteriorate. And I want to be careful how I say this. It opens up possibilities for things like affairs. It opens up possibilities for things like, why am I in this relationship? I want out. It opens up possibilities for the death of that relationship. Why? Because it stopped growing and you get bored. And you say, I'm tired of this relationship. I must be in the wrong one. She must not be my soulmate. He must not be the one that God has for me. And all these crazy thoughts you never thought you would think, they start coming because you're bored with the relationship. The relationship's gotten stale. Why? Because you're not discovering. You're not learning anymore because you're living in assumption. Are you starting to see the power of questions? How something that's so simple and innocuous actually has the power to deepen your relationship, take it to new levels. Those of you who are married, if your relationship is struggling, you don't need more sex, probably, although that might be nice. You know, it's not that you need hotter sex, better sex. You need to start listening to each other, asking questions, discovering each other, because you're made, and the person that you're in relationship with is made in the image of God. Therefore, they are of eternal value. There is so much to discover in them, about them. Start asking questions. Start discovering this person that God made in his image, how amazing they are. Sometimes you might get how frustrating they are, but you're learning as you're learning to hear their heart and understand how they think. This is the ingredients of love. Love isn't just that feeling that you get. It's this discovering, and it's this being in awe of this person that I'm, you know, getting to know better, and that makes me laugh, or that makes me think about things I never thought about, that makes me feel things I never felt before. This wonder of this dynamic that God's created in relationships, it comes in discovery. It comes as we learn about each other. We know this from early on in our dating, when you don't know the person and you can't wait to be with them again because you want to learn who they are and discover them. Don't let that stop once you get married or 1, 5, 10, 30, 40 years into marriage. Keep learning. And questions help us keep discovering. And it keeps the relationship, you know, new. It keeps it on fire. It keeps it open. It keeps you discovering. And believe it or not, that's why you love relationships. That's what's feeding you. That's what's giving you that sense of, yeah, I love being with this person. This is the person I fell in love with all those years ago. Or this is the person that makes me, you know, feel this way. You maybe have never thought about this, but questions have incredible power to open up the person. And so once you're in relationship, once you've maybe asked a question, and now they're answering, questions then help you begin to understand what they're saying, to help clarify, because none of us are perfect communicators. None of us say everything perfectly. None of us hear everything perfectly. So you need to use questions to help you understand what they're saying. You use questions to bring clarity. Again, just like I was making a big deal about assumption, once you start the conversation, once you start the relationship, once you start the discussion you're in, the moment you slip in, oh, I know what they're saying, you slip into assumption, that begins to deteriorate that relationship and that discussion. Keep asking questions. Keep seeking to understand. What did Stephen Covey say all those years ago? Seek to understand, not to be, remember, to be understood. Seek first to understand, not first to be understood. That's really similar to the VIP relationship thing we talked about last week. When I am thinking I'm the VIP, then I'm all about you understanding me. It's all about getting you to understand me because I'm the most important. But when I flip that and start treating like you're the most important, then one of the ways that comes out is I want to understand you. And how do you understand? By asking questions. You think you've starting to understand where they're at, then you know, stop and say, is this what you're saying? Do I hear this right? You're clarifying. And maybe you got that right. Way to go. That makes them feel like, hey, I'm being heard. I'm being listened to. I matter. So questions have all this power. The nature of questions have power. So make sure you're only using the questions to understand this person better, to clarify what they're saying, to learn, to discover. Don't slide in to begin to using those questions to trap or to interrogate this person. Some of us are in relationships where we might have a personality that comes off like you're an interrogator. The moment you feel like you're being interrogated, you begin to shut down. Isn't this true? You're in this wonderful relationship, it's open, and you feel like you're being loved. Then something happens, and all of a sudden you feel like this person's using questions as a weapon. They're using questions to trap you. They're using questions to interrogate you. The openness shuts down. You're like, oh, I don't want to be interrogated, and you shut down. So I want you to use questions. They're powerful, but don't turn those questions into traps to prove your point or to interrogate. And ask yourself, am I asking, you know, questions that are, you know, that come off like, you know, it's a great inquisition? And isn't there a fine line between interrogating and questioning? Some people might think there are synonyms, but we use those two words in a way that there's a difference. You know, you're questioning what I'm saying. You're interrogating me. Okay, I need to back off. You're asking questions to help to understand. See the difference? One of them is kind of this attitude, this spirit of attacking, this attitude, this spirit of, you know, to trap or interrogate someone. This other one is I'm trying to learn and discover. So there's nuances, I have to tell you. There's nuances about using questions. They're powerful. So think about these things as you're learning this new territory of using questions to deepen your relationship, using questions to explore new vistas of the relationship you're in. And then one last point about questions is that questions take us deeper. When we ask questions well, it takes us deeper. It deepens the sense of love. It deepens a sense of connection. It deepens a sense of intimacy. Notice that I use the language not just asking questions, but asking questions well. So, you know, point A and B, not C. Use questions to learn, to discover, to explore. Use questions to help you understand and clarify. Don't use questions to trap or interrogate. When you ask questions well, there's a sense of deepening that happens as you're going deeper and deeper. And when two people go deeper into knowing each other, that brings a sense of connection and love. And whether or not you've recognized this language, when you feel deeply connected to somebody, that's love. That feeling of connection is a part of what love feels like. I feel connected. I feel like you get me. Aren't you attracted to a person who gets you? You feel like when I talk, you seem to get me. Or you use questions that draw out who I really am. I feel loved. I feel valued by you because of this deepening in relationship. Now, I also know that's the way some of us are wired because of experiences that we've had, that sometimes some of us feel like, I don't want to be known. I don't want to be interrogated. I don't want anybody to explore, to find out that I'm this terrible person or that I have this low self-image. And we sometimes treat people who have questions like this. And you may know somebody like that. You have to be tender. You have to be gentle. You have to slow down. Because that somewhere that person's been attacked, somewhere that person's been hurt, somewhere that person has been vulnerable and given themselves, opened themselves up, and somebody trashed them, somebody hurt them, abused them, destroyed something about them, and they're still recovering. And so they walk through life going, I don't want to be known, because if I get known, I might be rejected. And if you've been hurt and rejected deeply, there is this survival instinct that kicks in. I don't want to be hurt like that again. And subconscious, it's deep. And it's, I will do everything I can, even though I don't realize what I'm doing, I will do everything I can to keep from being hurt like that. And the only way I can get hurt like that is to be known deeply. And so I'm careful about opening up. So these things are true in relationship dynamics. Let's be sensitive to them. Let's be aware of them. Let's use questions not as weapons, but as opportunities to open, as openers into new areas of our relationship. So it's a positive, healthy, loving thing. Does this make sense? Some of you know exactly what I'm saying. Others, you're like, whatever, what's that all about? you'll find these things to be true sooner or later. Because we're all complex, we're all different, we've all been hurt, we all have history, and we bring all of that into our relationships, whether we realize it, whether we like it or not. Now, doesn't the whole idea, the tool of asking questions, life hack of asking questions, doesn't it beg a question? That once you ask a question, then you should do what? Good. You should listen to what the person is saying, because while questions deepen the relationship, listening strengthens the relationship. Let me explain this to you. You'll know instantly what I'm talking about. Remember the last time you were talking to somebody? You're in a relationship, and it might have been someone who you know closely. It could be somebody you just met. But remember the last time that you were talking to somebody, and as you're communicating, as you're sharing, they look past you over your shoulder. Come on, smile at me like this has happened. They stop making eye contact, and they start looking over your shoulder. Or they're looking around the room, and you want to go, hello, I'm talking here. You know, I might be pouring my heart out. What are you looking for? Oh, we already did that question. You know, what is it you're at? You know, how come you're not listening to me? And when you don't feel listened, ask me this. Tell me this. When you don't feel listened, do you feel valued? When someone's looking past you and looking around the room, you know, do you feel valued? Of course you don't. Because they're valuing something else or valuing the anticipation of something else to see that person, to get out of here, to see that. While you're right there, and you don't have to be talking about something that's really important. You're just talking. You know, you're expressing, and they don't think what you have to say is important. And maybe it's a small thing, and maybe, you know, they have a good reason for looking past you. But if they keep doing that, you feel unvalued. And when you feel unvalued, do you feel love? No, you don't. I know you're not thinking you are, but I'm saying you don't. When you feel like you don't value, like you're not being valued, then you don't feel loved. Opposite is true. When you feel valued, that's love. That's part of what love is. You're valuing me just by listening. You realize the significance of the power of listening. And I think this is one of the reasons why Jesus says in Luke 8:18, consider carefully how you listen. Now, look at that statement. I would have thought Jesus would have said, because he says this in the middle of him teaching, right? He's teaching away. This is great stuff, powerful truth. It's Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount, all this great teaching. And you would think Jesus would say, now consider carefully what I'm saying. Consider carefully the teaching. That's good, that's true, but that's not what Jesus says. He says, consider carefully how you're listening. Stop and think about, how am I listening? So it helps us see there's a way of listening that brings value. There's a way of listening that's better than other ways. There's a way of listening that communicates, for instance, communicates love. The way that you listen to me when I'm talking to you, especially one-on-one, I'm not asking for anybody to all of a sudden perk up right now. He's talking about me, you know, pay attention. No, I'm talking about when we're, you know, one-on-one in relationship or there's a circle of us and I'm talking and you're doing something else, you know, I don't feel loved by you, because how you listen is how you love. Let's not make this about me, about you. When you're talking and I'm like, but I'm saying, yeah, I'm with you, but my body language is screaming that I'm thinking about something else. How you listen is how you love. Consider carefully how you listen. Isn't this brilliant on Jesus' part? Just the nuance of a couple words changes the whole meaning and the whole impact. This is why Jesus' words are so powerful and worth thinking about and wrestling with. Consider carefully how you listen, because one of the things that your listening does is it communicates how you feel about this person. How you listen is how you love. Now, maybe you're not trying to say to a person you just met today, I love you. I want you to know I love you, so I'm listening. You know, okay, that's fair enough. But what about the person you're married to? What about the person that you bore? What about the person who bore you? Or not bores you, but you know, what about, you know, your parents, your children, your friends, you know, the people that are in your life that you care about? Do you really want to say to them, I don't care about you? Of course you don't. That's why you don't say, I don't care, with your words. But remember how communication is what? Words and tone of voice and body language. Communication is words, tone of voice, and body language. So you could be saying, you know, I care about you, but your body language and your tone are communicating something different. Those of you who have had, your company has had listening seminars, or you went to a class in college, or, you know, somewhere you went to a seminar we've done here about listening, and you know that there are these listening skills, and you can, some people teach that, you know, if you lean forward and cock your head just the right way, strategically grab your chin and stroke it and go, oh, you know, that helps to communicate that you're listening. That might be true. It's better than, huh, you know, crossing your arms, pulling back and going in a very, you know, suspicious way, huh. Yes, it does. If you're interested, your body language should show it. But don't try to play us. Don't try to say, well, if I cock my head, you know, this degree and stroke my chin, even though I'm not paying attention to you, I want you to feel like I am. And we can get into this whole dynamic. It's like, what? People can tell when they're being played. People can tell when you're just going through the motions. So forget all that stuff. Engage, listen, get, you know, hear what they're saying, listen for their words, listen for their tone, listen for their body language. Get engaged so you are quick to listen to what they're saying. Now, when I use the phrase quick to listen, does that remind anybody of anything? How about James chapter 1, where Jesus' brother James says, now, my dear brothers and sisters, this relationships. Do you see already? It's relationships. Everyone, who does that include? Everyone. You know, their spouses, your friends, your parents, your children, everyone you're in relationship with. Everyone should be quick to listen. That's where that phrase came from. And he says, and slow to speak and slow to become angry. Actually, if you're not quick to listen, you won't be slow to speak and slow to be angry. You will be quick to get to speak and quick to get angry. These all go together. We're on a sermon on listening, so let's just take out that phrase, quick to listen. What does that mean? How can I be a person who's quick to listen in the relationship that I care about, the people that I'm with, that I love? Well, I would say be quick to listen to their words by being attentive. Focus. You know, look at them. Listen to them. Be attentive. That's the whole, you know, don't look around. Be attentive and be quick to listen to their words. But already I've implied it's more than just words. Listen to their heart. Be quick to listen to their words. Be quick to listen to their heart. What does that look like? Well, if you've taken one of these seminars, then you know the next phrase, the next word, is what we call empathic listening. What is that? It's a word. Empathic is a word that means to feel with, to enter in to the pathos, the feelings that this person is feeling. So you're listening in such a way that you're listening to words, tone, body language. You're engaged. You're attending to all that, paying attention to it, because you're trying to enter into what they're feeling. Not just feel with. That sympathy is what the Greek, is that's a Greek word, sympathize. To empathize is to enter into their feelings. So you're so engaged, you're trying to get into their skin. You're trying to get into what they're saying and feeling. Because when I'm in an argument, when I'm in a discussion, when I'm sharing something as deep, I'm not just sharing words and tones and body language. I'm sharing me. I'm expressing me. I'm expressing the deep parts of me. Do you love me enough to enter in, to feel with, to get into what I'm feeling? Now, obviously, you don't have to do this when you're talking about the weather. Oh, honey, you mean it's going to be stormy today? How do you feel about that? Kick him in, you know. No, I'm not talking about, I'm talking about when relationships are going deeper, when a person is sharing their heart, when you know, it could be something that feels like a mediocre type of thing or a medium thing, but just be attentive. Try to feel, try to get them, right? That connects with us. I want to get you, because again, when we feel getted, I think I made it up. When you feel like someone gets you, then you feel loved. You feel connected. You feel, yeah, I matter. I value to this person. There's a connection. I like being with this person. They make me feel like I matter. Now, let me teach you a trick here. Some of you already do this, but let's be intentional about it. Good listening, listening well is something that you have to keep doing. You don't listen just at the beginning of the conversation and then go, okay, I got you. Now you've started to assume. You know, they said that the first word, the first phrase, you saw that first expression of anger or fear or whatever. Oh, yeah, I know what they're thinking. I know what they're saying. You shut down, and now you're thinking about what you want to say. No, you've stopped listening. By its very nature, listening is something I have to keep doing. It's keep being open. Keep gathering new information. We're back to point one. Keep listening to keep learning, to keep discovering. And so I'll put this on the screen first, and I'll talk about it. Listening well includes what we talked about under point one, asking questions. And it's two kinds of questions or two environments of questions. What I mean by that is, first of all, you're listening internally. You're asking questions internally as you're listening. Help me explain this. So you're talking, I'm listening to you. And as you're talking, I'm reading your words, your tone, your body language. I'm being attentive. I'm trying to feel in my way in. I'm gathering. And as I hear things, I start asking questions internally. I wonder why he said it like that. I wonder why his arms are crossed. I wonder why his tone is raised. You're asking these questions. This is what it means to listen well. To listen in an engaged way means I'm asking questions about this person. I'm not thinking about what I'm going to say next. I'm thinking about what message their tone, their words, their body language is all saying. And I'm asking myself internally, why did they say that? And I might then go to the next environment, and that's external questions. As I'm asking questions of myself and asking why what their words are communicating, why they're angry or why they're doing this, then I might express that out externally, internal questions, external questions, and the external questions become something like, oh, hold on a second, is this what you're saying? Because it sounds like you're saying this. Am I getting it right? Yeah, you are. Okay, now I get it. I clarified. I empathized well. We can move on. Or you might say, it seems like you're saying this, and they can go, no, you're not listening, or I'm not expressing myself well. Let's start over. But your external question paused the communication so you can understand, because that's what you're trying to do. To go deeper in understanding, you got to ask questions internally and then externally. While they're talking, don't ask internal questions like, I wonder how badly the Browns will beat the Bengals. The Bengals will beat the Browns today. You know, don't ask those kind of questions. Ask questions about how they're communicating, what you know about them. Help, because you're trying to understand. And at the right time, you'll recognize it's time to maybe interrupt. It's time to say, I'm not sure I understand. Hold on a minute. Because you're trying to know them, right? You're not just doing, you're not putting in your time. Husbands, don't do this. You're not just putting your time listening to your wives. No, you're loving them by listening. So get engaged. Ask questions. Discover, learn who this wonderful person is that God's brought into your life, that you've committed to before God. Who is this person that has just stepped into your life that you're wondering, should I take another step with them? Who is this person I just met? You know, all whatever place you are in your relationships, you're asking questions to learn, to discover, to go deeper in that relationship. This works for all relationships. So can I close with inviting you to learn to love great questions, to become a student of asking the right questions to help your relationship go deeper. I was telling someone earlier that I have a book on my bookshelf called The Question Book by a guy named Bob Biehl, B-I-E-H-L. I love this book because he has all these questions to ask yourself when you're thinking about getting married, when you're thinking about taking a new job, when you're thinking about buying something. Whatever you can think about, he has a chapter or a sub-chapter about the questions you should ask yourself before you make this decision, before you do this. And this has shaped my life. People who know me know I love questions. It's how I learn. It's how I make decisions. It's how I decide whether a decision is a good question, a good decision or not. I bombard it with questions. This is how I study the Bible. Every time I read the Bible, every time I hear the Bible, I'm bombarding with questions. I'm asking questions of the text, of the person, of the situation, of God. And I want to invite you to learn to love questions, and especially great questions. Maybe gather great questions. Pay attention to people that you see have a great relationship and say, you know, hey, how do you do that? And ask questions. Learn to love great questions. Learn to ask great questions. And then let me leave you with this. Learn to ponder. Learn to ponder great questions. And you can do this by pondering. What do I mean by that? Letting it percolate, wrestle around in your mind, just kind of sit there, think about it, consider it. The best questioner of all time is Jesus. He asked 307 different questions in the New Testament. Pick one and ponder it. Don't rush past it. Ponder it. Maybe I can leave you with three questions. What do you want? These are all questions Jesus asked. What do you want? Write about that. Think about that. Ponder it. What are you looking for? Or how about the last question? The first one that Jesus asked in the book of John is, what do you want? And some translations have, what are you looking for? The last question in the book of John is Jesus asking, anybody remember? Peter. Hey, Peter, do you love me? You remember Peter was like, of course I love you. Jesus asked him again, Peter, do you love me? Peter's like, yeah, you know I love you. Jesus asked him a third time. Why? Well, that's something you should ponder. Go read that passage. Let Jesus's question, if you're a Christian, you're a follower of Jesus, let that question wash over you. Let him ask it 3, 4, 5 times. There's a reason why he asked it 3 times, and there's a reason why he'll ask you. And we're not going to have any closing song today. The service is going to close with these three questions just hanging in the air. And I invite you, wrestle with these questions, ponder them, revel in them, play around with them, write them down, write down your response. Just see what God does in you as you love, ask, and ponder these great questions of Jesus. How about if you close your eyes with me? Lord, turn this little exercise. It seems so simple. Turn into a teaching opportunity. Turn it into a way of exposing things about us, things in us that we've never seen before. The thing I love about you, Jesus, is Holy Spirit, whenever you expose things in us, you never do it to condemn us. Never, never. You expose things in us to grow us, to deepen us, to heal us, to teach us. It's always a good thing whenever we open ourselves up and become vulnerable and let you ask us, what do you want? Only good things are going to come from us laying down before you, sitting before you, taking a walk with you and saying, hearing Jesus ask you, what are you looking for? It'll be a good thing to let us wrestle with the question, do you love me? And Holy Spirit, you inspired these words to be written down. Now light them up in our hearts, inspire them again to percolate into our hearts and our minds. And I know good things are going to come from this. Because I know that to be true, it's with great joy and confidence that I pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.